protest and civil unrest have overtaken the streets of Ferguson the last 2 weeks in the wake of the shooting of an unarmed black man by a white officer. Sources say that the last couple of days have been much calmer.
It sparked a multifaceted conversation, but our next guest, it says it was an opportunity to take an up-close look at the relationship between peace, violence, and protest.
Frank Farley joins us. He's a psychologist at Temple University and also the president-elect of the Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. Frank, welcome to Central Time.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your time in Ferguson? How recently were you there?
I've been there since Wednesday, the last two and a half days, during the day and then at night. And I got back this afternoon to Philly.
And tell us about, why did you find it important to be there now?
Well, this is such a national event, worldwide event, I discovered. One of the things that really astounded me was the international media. I spent a significant amount of time with a guy who was filming for Russian TV. And I did an interview with Venezuelan television, Iranian television, they're all over the place. So, this is such an international event. And is it well representing America or is it not? Is it well representing democracy at work? What might come out of it? And so I felt that, I'm president-elect beginning in January of this, Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. And I thought, this is such an opportunity for me to just walk the venue and get some impressions. And so that's what I've been doing.
Well, let's hear about some of your impressions. You were there at what will be known as a historic time in our country's history. What did you see and hear?
Well, all sorts of things. Let me go through. I'd like to mention some of the positive things first, because honestly, we've been getting so much negativity out of there. And we all know that, if it bleeds, it leads. And so we sometimes pass up the positive. So I want to touch on some of what I saw as sort of positive features, then we can go to the negative side of the ledger, if you will. But, this is an exercise of democratic rights, the right to demonstrate, to assemble, to protest. And, of course, there were both positive and negative features of that. It turned out that some of those rights were curtailed. The police say it was necessary. Others say it wasn't, and that there was police overreaction. And so that's one issue that will come out of this going forward. How well people were able to demonstrate and to protest and to make their views known, and what curtailment of that was undertaken, and was it legitimate? And I think that's going to lead to a debate over police and policing and civil disobedience, etc., going forward. By the way, I had a great opportunity as I was leaving the place last night at around about sometime after midnight. I ran into Sergeant Ron Johnson, who was in charge of the whole thing. He was appointed by the governor. The Missouri State Highway Patrol took over running the whole police side of things. And I bumped into him, and so I had a chance to talk with him. And his view is that, yes, there were some police problems, but in his view, he's sort of viewing it as an educational process, a sort of school, in a sense, where they can learn what was good and what was not good about the police response, and learn to do better, basically. And so he's viewing it as a educational experience, which is an interesting idea. So democratic rights being expressed in the street, we haven't seen a whole lot of examples of that of late. And so I think the report card is sort of mixed on how well that went. Raising national consciousness on race and criminal justice. I think that's a positive outcome of this. In the wake of Zimmerman, I was hoping that the whole nation would get, you know, exercise about racial disparities in such things as sentencing. I mean, when a white man and a black man commit essentially the same crime, the statistics show that the black perpetrator has roughly a 20% longer sentence as a consequence. And that's wrong. And, you know, and there are other statistics. One that I found was in the FBI Uniform Crime Reporting System, stopping people for suspicious behavior. And something like almost 49 or 50% of the stops in America are black males, when they represent less than 10% of the overall population. And the Zimmerman thing was essentially a stop for quote-unquote suspicious behavior. So all of these statistics are really serious and need to be, you know, dealt with nationally. So I think that this thing in Ferguson will raise, I hope, the national consciousness on that. We didn't do a whole lot in the wake of Zimmerman. Maybe this is a 1-2 punch, and maybe this time it will raise the consciousness enough to begin to do concrete things with the criminal justice system.
Well, there certainly appears to be a greater public outcry over this incident in Missouri. And you said that although the protests have been largely free of major violence, there's been some violence, but it hasn't gone due south. But you say that that could change in an instant. What other shoe might fall?
The other shoe that everybody was telling me was if Officer Wilson does not get charged, and the grand jury allegedly won't come out with a decision until October sometime. But people were telling me that if there's no charge for this, then, as some told me, all hell will break loose. So that could be a really negative consequence if people react that way. And you know, we don't know all of the conditions. A friend of mine, Elizabeth Loftus, was on television a day or two ago. She's the world's leading authority on eyewitness testimony. And as she was pointing out, eyewitness testimony can be notoriously unreliable. And she cited some statistics about that. So one of the things in this case is there are conflicting eyewitness reports. So hopefully the grand jury will try to winnow and sift through all of that and just see what is believable and what is not believable.
Now, one of the things that you study is peace. Were there people that you saw on the ground who were actively trying to promote peace at protests and other times?
I did. For one thing, there were a lot of interesting, you know, sort of outsiders that I would classify as offering helping behavior. There were people from the National Lawyers Guild who were wearing special green caps and were walking around as observers. There were a significant number of first aid volunteers. I was talking to one from Connecticut, first aid volunteers who were walking around to be available to help. The clergy were out in force. They were all wearing orange T-shirts that said clergy. So there was a lot of, you know, the presence of helping behavior was brought out by this event. You know, whether it, how it will set in the national consciousness, I don't know. Things are getting better. The drawdown of the National Guard definitely seems to have been a positive factor. And people were less fearful, in my judgment. And also protest fatigue is probably setting in. You know, you just can't keep doing it all the time. And people seem to be increasingly relaxed in walking around. The first night I was there, for example, the police would not allow you to stand still. You had to keep moving. And, you know, so people kept moving all the time, and they really couldn't stand still and talk or discuss issues. Well, the police backed off on that, and last night There were small groups of people all over the place who were talking about issues. There was one group of people who were attempting to get petitions going. And their argument was that, you know, beating the streets and chanting and shouting and so on would be less effective than signing petitions. And so they were trying to get people to sign petitions to, for example, recall the mayor of Ferguson.
Well, we'll continue this conversation. We're talking with psychologist Frank Farley. He's just returned from Ferguson, Missouri, where he was observing peace, violence, and conflict and furthering his studies there.
And we invite you to join our conversation. What would you like to know about the events unfolding in Ferguson? Have you been a part of large protest demonstrations before? And what lessons did you learn there about crowd behavior, about peace, and the way that situations unfold when large groups of people are gathered around a cause together like that? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org.
This is Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with psychologist Frank Farley about what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri, and what we can learn about peace, violence, and conflict.
And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. What questions do you have about peace, violence, and conflict? What turns a peaceful protest into a violent one? And what's the most effective way to promote social change? Are protests the way to do it? Let us know your thoughts. 800-642-1234 or talk@WPR.org. Let's start by taking a call from Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I've been in a couple situations like that. Probably the scariest one was, I don't know if you remember, about 10 years ago, Summerfest in the game area, it turned into a big, you know, big riot, and it was scary seeing the wave of people coming and going and bottles and rocks and things being thrown at the police. And, you know, they were cornered, they were backed up, and people were bloody, there was fights, it was unbelievable. And, you know, they were trying their best to really survive. And, you know, what are you going to do if somebody comes up? And in that situation, you know, you got to protect yourself as the officer. You have to, and they're not seeing the big picture, and you get that mob mentality. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the media. Unfortunately, they're supposed to be neutral parties, but a lot of times they're not. And they're just, and even what I've been hearing on the radios and again on your show, I like very much, but they're not seeing the big picture of why did the officer, what really happened? Everybody's jumping the gun. He has to protect himself and the people around him. You know, until we know the whole picture, how can we judge him and judge what he did?
Thanks, Rick. What about that, Frank Farley? If we turn this on to Ferguson, you had just come back from there this week, and I'm wondering how you would compare what you saw in reality on the streets of Ferguson to what is being reported in the media.
I was struck by some of the media coverage as being, you know, as focusing on the most extreme behavior. I mean, you know, that's sort of human nature, if you will. You know, the thing that stands out against the average, everyday, humdrum backdrop is the thing that we will look at and focus on. And so the throwing of tear gas canisters and those sorts of things got the most attention. You know, some people would argue, well, that's the most newsworthy part of the whole thing. And I can see that argument. The one thing that struck me about media was one could argue that there was just too doggone much media at this thing. You know, when I'm walking around, they are all over the place and they want to interview anybody and everybody. I wouldn't have been surprised if the media were interviewing each other, you know. They were all over the place. And I mentioned earlier that from all over the world, that really struck me. You know, Russian TV, Iranian TV, different South American countries, Venezuela, for example. And, boy, you know, that's going all over the world. And there were just interviews going on everywhere. and, you know, looking for something perhaps that's newsworthy. So I think one could argue that maybe there was too much media and it exaggerated certain things and focused on the negative. You know, I started off this conversation tonight, you know, today, where I said I wanted to start off talking about some positive things. And but the media really has been tilting in the negative direction. Yes.
Well,
may have been just too much coverage.
And we thank Rick for that call. We're going to move next to Sean joining us in Rice Lake. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, hi. I was at Occupy Minneapolis a couple years ago. It was, you know, there was a lot of good times there with different people. Once in a while, a group or two, you know, they would have a little bit of a different opinion. But for the most part, it was, you know, there was a lot of good people that, you know, that were getting together. And for anybody out there listening who wanted to get involved, for the most part, you know, it was a really good time.
All right, so Sean having a positive experience at Occupy Minneapolis. It's interesting how there were peaceful protests, many of them that happened in Ferguson, a lot of coverage of some of the rioting that happened. But what happens, Frank, in that moment that turns a protest on the edge like that, from one that's peaceful to one that's not?
We don't know precisely, but there are certain things that can happen. There are terms that we use in psychology like social facilitation or emotional contagion. So somebody, you have, and we've seen this, for example, in flash mobs as one example. So you have a large crowd. Somebody does something extreme. They knock over a light pole. Somebody else imitates that and does one themselves. Or somebody breaks a window in a shop, and then someone else does it, and you get this almost disinhibition effect going on. And again, we use terms like social facilitation, emotional contagion that can run through the group. Our impulse control sort of gets weakened, and it just boils over.
Almost a
snowball effect.
Frank, during the Vietnam protests, you were among a group of faculty members at the UW-Madison who patrolled the campus and tried to ensure that there was no violence overnight. I'm wondering what tactics you used to prevent violence at that time and how you used your experience from several years ago in Ferguson.
What a great question. What we did then, you know, we had like armbands. So we'd be recognized as professors who were part of the group. We had a meeting beforehand in the law school on Bascom Hill, and off we went. And we did this for several nights. It was really just to have presence there. And, you know, sometimes the mere presence of quote-unquote authority figures can calm things down. And we would talk with people who were, you know, getting really agitated, etc. And that's basically all we did. If that were to transfer over to Ferguson, I suppose the closest would be the National Lawyers Guild people who were there. And I did chat with some of them. They weren't as active as we were back in Bascom Hill in Madison. They would just go around and basically observe, you know, if they saw something that would seem to be, you know, police brutality, for example, or brutality by others than the police, etc. And I asked them, do you do anything about it? And they said, no, we just sort of observe it. And then I think they relay that information back to their national organization for whatever use. It was pretty low key, but I think by having, you know, enough of them around, it might have helped. I think having the clergy around. The clergy were omnipresent. They really were, you know, if a confrontation between police and citizens took place, often the clergy would go there immediately. So they were behaving more like we professors at UW-Madison behaved, you know, back in the Vietnam era.
And we leave it there. Frank, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience.
You're welcome.
That was Frank Farley, a psychologist at Temple University and president-elect of the Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. He just came back from Ferguson, Missouri.
I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.